Welcome back to the show, everybody. My guest today is Carla Molinaro. Carla is the 50-kilometer world champion, founder of Strength and Conditioning Yoga for Runners, and world record holder for the Land's End to Jono Groats Run. Expect to learn how having a race plan can prepare you for challenges, how to control your controllables, using play within your performance, and much more.
Hey, do you mind doing me the biggest favor, and that is hitting the follow or subscribe button on whatever platform you're listening to this show on? It is the cheapest and easiest way in which you can support the show. By doing that, it raises the profile, it allows us to get more guests on, and helps create better, interesting conversations for you guys to listen to. So your support is super valuable, and I thank you so much for doing that. This episode is brought to you by Mindstrong Sport. As an athlete myself, I wished I had something to help me get into meditation and also practice mental skills. As a coach, I wanted to give something to athletes to work on these skills in their own time, and that's where Mindstrong Sport comes in. Using specially designed meditations, insights and skills, blending mindfulness, meditation, performance psychology that you can practice in your own time. The goal of Mindstrong Sport is to not only make a calmer, confident and more focused mind on the field, but improve the quality of the mind off it as well. So whether you're an athlete and you want to use it for yourself, whether you're a coach that could use it also, or even offer it as a tool to those that you work with in your teams, Mindstrong Sport is designed to make your mind your greatest skill. As a listener of the show, you get 20% off all subscriptions by using the code RAISINGYOURGAME at checkout via the special link in the description of this episode. That's 20% off all subscriptions by using the code Raising Your Game at checkout via the link in the description of this episode.
But on to today's episode with Carla Molinaro. Enjoy. Carla, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So you're fresh off a win from the 50-kilometer world championships. Congratulations on the win.
Thank you.
First question is, straight off the bat, what has this recent race and this recent win taught you about yourself?
Oh, that's a good question. It's weird because it still doesn't really feel real. Like, I don't know if it takes time to sink in a little bit. And also the race for me, it was easy. I didn't like put myself into a hole. I stuck to a race plan and ran really controlled. So I didn't feel like completely beat up and destroyed. So I don't know if that's kind of what's led me to feel like, oh, it was just a race. Because that's kind of how I feel at the moment. It doesn't really feel any different. It's nice getting some high fives from my friends, but
but you didn't get to celebrate it, right? You actually were a little ill after the race.
Yeah, I finished the race and I've never thrown up like that in my life. I just was really, really sick, and then I had to go to drug testing, and then I was like really scared that I didn't have enough liquid in me to be able to go to the loo, so I drank so much water that I then basically got rid of all the salts in my body, and then I couldn't get up off the bathroom floor to go to the party.
So any idea what that's actually doing, what's going on there when that actually happened?
It's just like, what's it called, hyponatremia, where you basically just flush all the salts out of your body, so you drink too much, which is actually more dangerous than being dehydrated. So we spoke to one of the UK athletics doctors and then a local doctor who gave me a prescription for this weird drink, which basically looked like a carton of apple juice. And yeah, then a few hours later, I was fine again. But yeah, I was sad that I didn't go to the bougie party on the rooftop.
So with that experience of what was it called again? What do you believe it's called?
It's either hypo or hyponatremia.
It's hypo, because when I played cricket in Australia, we used to get actually quite warned about that. When we played in Adelaide, it gets really, really hot. I remember playing in 47 degrees in one summer, And I had a guy that got genuine heat exhaustion and what was it, where he sort of like overheats. I mean, he came in from batting and he had to put a jumper on because he was shaking and shivering. But they warn you of like hypohydration, where you overhydrate. And have you ever experienced anything like that before? Or what's been the craziest thing that's happened to you either during or after a race?
I have had that before. I had it actually probably about 15 years ago in a triathlon, but I got taken straight to a medical tent and put on like a saline drip. And then like 10 minutes later, you're golden. You're fine. But India's a bit dodge. So I was like, I want the medical tent was hilarious. It was basically like a tent with some random mattresses on the floor. And they're like, do you want to go lie in there? I was like, absolutely not. I'm like, you're putting needles anywhere near me, I will ride this out.
Yeah, right. And then I heard you took a rice cooker as well for food.
Yeah,
it's prep as well. You bought one out there. Okay. So what were you eating? Because that would really concern me. So again, India has notoriously, you get things like Delhi Belly and it being quite intense. But that is a nutrition for what you're doing is fundamental. And you must have been sticking to some form of plan previously. And then obviously it's a massive shift real quick. So you were keeping that under control. And what were you doing for yourself?
Yeah, to me, that was one of the control the control. It's like everyone knows that you can get a dodgy stomach in India. And I would say I've heard so many people that had happened to that I wasn't willing to take the risk. And a few of the other girls that I knew had gone out to the hotel early and they're like, yeah, we've all been fine. And I'm like, nah. But luckily, it was only for 2 days that I had to have food before the race. And I was flying in from Dubai. So I literally went to the supermarket in Dubai before I went and got pretty cooked chicken breast, halloumi, some tomatoes, rice, and some eggs. And then, in a rice cooker, we just have oil, you can cook the eggs in there, cook the rice in there. I tried to warm the chicken up, doesn't work. I had taken a little gas thing with me and I went out to try and find gas, but I couldn't find any. And then eventually I was like, I'll just buy a rice cooker. That's fine. Just had oats in the morning, rice and chicken for lunch and for dinner. But actually I normally do that for the 2 days before a race anyway. So it's what I normally eat. It's really boring, but it's low fiber, high carb. It does the job. So I was fine, like a psychopath in my room, just eating my rice.
How long was it from landing in India to actually race day?
I landed Thursday night and I raced Sunday morning.
Right, so it's really quick turnaround. So yeah, climatizing, so that's not quick. That's quick, sorry. That's not long.
Well, that's why I'd been in Dubai for 2 weeks before the race, which was the same climate.
Oh, right. So yeah, okay.
It was actually a little bit hotter and a little bit more humid in Dubai. And one of my friends lived there. So she said, did I want to go and stay with her? And it was perfect because it means I got like the big flight out of the way coming from South Africa to Dubai. So I only had like a 2 hour flight into India. I'd acclimatized. I was used to the heat and the humidity. So it meant I could spend as little time in India as possible.
Yeah. Okay. You said these were one of your controllables. What else are sort of controllables that you like to control in what you're doing?
Yeah, I guess for this race, it was the food. It was doing my heat training in Dubai. It was flying in as close to the race as possible. Having all the right nutrition and stuff for the race. Going and seeing the race venue the day before. Which I know, like, it was a bit of a mission to get in, but some people like to be bothered and they're like, no, I'm not going to bother. I'm going to see it tomorrow. But for me, I was like, well, we're here now. I'm just going to ride it out until they eventually let us in. Cause we went to the race venue and they're like, there's not a race here tomorrow. We're like, there is. We eventually got let in. So I think, they were probably the main ones. Oh, and like the general training block leading into the race. Like we knew what kind of pace I would have to run judging by previous races. So you know, the training was geared pretty much towards that.
And just for a quick one on that, what's the race pace that you had to maintain?
So I'd been training at 3:45 minutes per K, but come the actual race, we ended up running at 3:55. So that was nice.
Wow. That's for 50 kilometers.
Yeah.
Wow. That just blows my mind. doing that, just trying to maintain that pace is just, yeah, that's insane. And with running, you can get real nitty gritty with it. I think because I've met a lot of runners, you can really cross the T's and dot the I's. And I think even with the training that you've done, you can clearly do a training block, and then come race day, there are quite a lot of things that are uncontrollable. Mm. And so how much of what you do, whether it's physically, mentally, do you prepare yourself for those uncontrollables, and how do you deal with them?
Yeah, I've had that a little bit this year, but it's like one of my races, I got sick in the week before the race, and it was like, well, we're just going to have to kind of change the race plan, where initially we were going on pace, and it would just have to be, well, we're just going to like run on feel and see if I'm up to it and what the result will be. And everyone was like, oh, it's amazing you won. But that race, I wanted to run a specific time, and I just couldn't because I just didn't have that like thought end gear. So then you just have to accept, okay, it's fine. It was still a good race. We still ran hard. Sometimes you just got to take it on the chin a little bit, and sometimes you feel better. So one thing I've tried to do this year is actually learn how to run on feel a bit more, and learn to not be like so obsessed with my watch and splits and paces, and be like, okay, it feels like I'm going a little bit too hard, I need to back off, or this feels really easy, I'm going to pick the pace up, and learning, yeah, just what that feels like a bit more. And I think this is the first year, I've been running for like 20 years, and it's the first year I've like managed to do that.
So you'd almost say that is that common? Like, is it common that it can take that sort of longer time for you to get that feel, especially the distances that you're running?
Yeah, I think I've done loads of different distances, and I think a couple of years ago I decided to take it more seriously. And I think once I decided to do that, and you're just a little bit more mature, and yeah, all those things added on just helps with the race. Where before I thought like the best approach to running was just to like go out as hard as I could and bury myself, which it's fun to do that sometimes. I've got a 10K in a couple of weeks where I fully intend on doing that. But when you're running 50, 100K, it's not a good plan.
Dan Lawson, who's been on the podcast twice, and obviously you know Dan, he had said running an ultra is easier than running a marathon, because he said you are running against the clock. You are running, you're trying to go for a time, and you're forcing the watch, you're looking at the time, you're looking at splits, you're doing all of that. And there's actually probably an element to that where just even the internal anxiety that creates can just have a massive impact on the body. And then he would talk about how quite literally ultra running, and he does 24-hour racing, and I know you haven't gone up to 24-hour racing yet, have you?
Sleeping.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't blame you on that one. But he just literally describes it as his one foot in front of the other. And it's got that's quite a nice way of looking at it, I guess. Is there anything that you do pre-race to get yourself into a frame of mind like that, whether it's perhaps acceptance of uncontrollables, or maybe remembering that game plan plan that you've got? Is there anything that you would do to perhaps quell some of that either overexcitement that you might have for wanting to go out and run it as hard as you can, or maybe anxiety for, oh, there's some good competitors around here, I wonder if I'm going to do well?
Yeah, so the week before a race, I always sit down and do a race plan. I normally take myself away to like a good coffee shop with good cake. And then I'll just draw out either like the race course or the race profile, and then throughout that, I'll jot down like when I think it's going to be tough, like it might be, you know, lap 7-8 is probably going to hurt, or going up this climb, it's a really steep climb. At this point in the race, it's going to be really hot. Anything that I can think of that might impact my race, I jot down on there. So then at least when it happens in the race, you're like, you knew this was going to happen. Like, just suck it up. Like, you're fine. And then I try also on my race plan, I'll put like a pacing strategy together. So like for Comrades this year, which is an ultra in South Africa, I gave myself like a lower end pace target and a high end pace target. I didn't actually write them down anywhere else during the race. I just did it before for the world champs. I just wrote, actually, I just went for like best case scenario because I actually knew it would be a little bit slower because of the heat and humidity. And then anything else that I think might be important to put on there. So my nutrition strategy for India, I'd put, you know, it's going to be really hot and humid. You might get more chafing than normal because all your clothes are going to be wet and they're going to be rubbing. Your salt, your sunglasses, you tend to get like specks of like sweat flying onto them, which can be irritating. So all of those little things I just jotted down. So then it happens in the race, you're like, okay, cool, like it's not a problem. And I found I had a little bit of a dark patch in the race, but for this one it literally lasted 5 minutes. But Comrades, I probably had it for about an hour, and it kind of ebbs and flows in different races and you never know when it's going to come. But I think it's just remembering it's fine, you'll get out of it, you knew this was going to happen. And I find that it's like a really helpful way to also like set your intentions before you actually start doing the race. And the reason why I leave it till just the week before the race is if you do it too early, you don't know how your training block's gone. You could then set like unrealistic goals. You know, at the beginning of the training block, you're like, I want to do a 250 marathon, for example. You do your training and actually you're not quite there. You need to do a 255, or maybe it's gone so good and you're like, yeah, we are going to do 230. So leaving it till that last minute, you know how your training's gone, you know how you feel, you know if you've got any niggles or if you've been sick. So it lets you have like a more realistic race strategy than making it too far out, where you then have to change it. And then I think you get into your own head as well.
There was a guy called Sahil Bloom, who is a content creator online, big following. He just put up a post that was really interesting, actually. He put out something, and it was on his email newsletter, I think, as well, which was, he had this ABC strategy, goal system. Sure. So an ABC goal system, and that was based off him running a marathon. And he set himself a goal for a sub-3-hour marathon, I think it was. And so his A goal was sub-3-hour marathon. But then if throughout the race he didn't feel like he was going to succeed in that, he'd set a B goal, which was a plus 3-hour marathon. Or it might have been in sort of like sub-3:30 or something like that. And then the C goal was just finish the race.
Yeah.
There was this real fundamental like final goal, which I thought was quite interesting. But I wanted to dive into that race plan because I thought it was fascinating. And you said there, so you know, you are aware of when these moments are going to be really tough on the race. You're aware of what might happen. Are you actually writing an action to meet that awareness? So are you making note of, okay, I might get to this hill is going to be really tough and really challenging. And I'm probably going to start saying to myself, this is really tough, this is really challenging. And is there then an action that you put into place to say, I'm going to say this to myself? Or, yeah, what is there a genuine action to meet that awareness of the issue?
Yes, sometimes there is. So some of them, like for a specific hill, I will then be like, okay, remember in training when you ran up Camps Bay Drive, we did that. You did it in the pace. You know you can do it. So it's remembering that kind of narrative as you go through the race. It's like we've simulated this like hundreds of times by the time you get to the race. Like with some of it, I'll just write, you're going to need to suck it up. And like, then I just tell myself, I'm like, you're getting cramp or you're chafing. And it's like, well, just, you're not going to die. It's just going to be uncomfortable. So just suck it up and run. And I think, yeah, that's most of the time, that's kind of what happens in a race. It's just going to be hard and you just have to grind it out a little bit. And I think in ultras, it's kind of part of the parcel of why we're doing it. But yeah, sometimes I will try and like rein it back and remember a time where that has happened. And actually in this 50K world, my friend Ferda, who I was staying with in Dubai, said she always tells herself in races like stories. So it might be about the planets or colors or something. So I like also made a story for this one. This is going to sound ridiculous, but I was like pretending I was like a little lion, like through the Lion King. So I watched the Lion King film the day before. And then as like, I'm going through the race, because it was 10 laps, I needed something to think about. I was like, hey, you baby lion, you can just play around. And then like, you're getting bigger, you're taking more chances. And then at the end, like you're going for the kills. So like, that was quite fun to like distract myself on 10, 5K lap.
That's brilliant. That's such a creative way of doing it. Because something I was going to ask you was around where has sort of your mind gone, or perhaps some of the strangest places your mind has gone on really long runs. Dan Lawson had said before that he had an experience, I think, in the Gobi Desert where he was running for like 5 minutes and he took himself out of his body and he was like watching himself. And he's sort of like in this very sort of trippy world that he'd gone into. So yeah, have you ever experienced anything very strange, or maybe even had like an epiphany whilst you're running?
Not most of the time. I'm just like, this is bullshit. Like, what am I doing? But this is rubbish. Like, I'm going to quit. Maybe I should take up swimming. And then I'm like, no, Carly, you're rubbish at swimming. So yeah, I'm more, I guess, probably a bit more pragmatic, where you just like, you just want a little bitch and a moan and then you get over it and then you're all right. But no, I haven't had those crazy or like hallucinogenic experiences, which I think quite a lot of people get, but I think they normally come more with races where you've got sleep deprivation involved. So like the 24-hour racing where you haven't slept for 2 days.
Yeah, and you're just running constantly. You're just nothing for a very, very long time, and very monotonous as well. I think some of that stuff is done just around like tracks. And yeah, that would, even if you weren't sleeping, that would sometimes drive you up the wall. This whole idea of self-talk that's going on whilst you're on these runs, there's some really interesting research around motivational self-talk for runners. And it seems to work quite well, in the sense that when you're facing these tough moments, that you can get energized from it. And sometimes it just sounds like, if anything, it's quite literally keeping the negative self-talk at bay. And it's not that isn't going to happen. There must be times when you're telling yourself, like you've just mentioned there, like, take up swimming, pull the plug, like, why are you doing this? Is it ever like this constant battle, or is it that you have to almost fight fire with fire, that sense? Because I'm sure there must be so many times in that 50 kilometers where you're just sitting there going, there's just so much time. It's what, 6 hours that you were running for, and at an incredible pace.
Right, that one was like 3 hours 20. But actually, the biggest thing at the Worlds this year, because the pace was quite slow and it was like a very strategic race, which is different to how I've raced before. I've seen loads and loads of world champs. I'm sure everyone has, you know, 1500 meters, 5000 meters, 10,000 meters at the Olympics and the Worlds, where everyone stays in a bunch until the last lap and then they go. And that is exactly what happened in our race. So it's like very, very chilled, and people, just as the race went on, were dropping off. And actually in my head I was like, oh my god, I'm gonna win. And I was like, no, Carla, back in your box. And I was like, don't even think about that yet, like, you've got a job to do. So I actually had to keep on like refocusing and being like, keep your shit together, don't get ahead of yourself.
how far out was that? How far out from the end is that, that you're sort of having that conversation with yourself?
I was doing that from the beginning.
All right.
And I was having to feel like, I was like having to pull myself back in, going, calm down, get back in your box, sit there, baby lion, sit there.
And could you feel that from the other guy, from the other racers though? Like, do you feel that they could sort of sense that energy off you a little bit?
I could tell that they were struggling, because you can hear everyone else's breathing, and so I knew that I was in control. And I let the other girls go out at the front, and I sat behind them, because I was like, not going to kill myself if I don't have to, which was like interesting because in the guys' race, they just went from the gun, this one Spanish dude, and just went as hard as he could, like raced hard. And I was like, well, let me try this racing in a pack thing. And then I could, it was quite good because there was on the course, so it was like a lollipop. So the little out and back bit, you could see the other ladies and then you could just see them, like the facial expressions and people getting more tired as the race went on. So I think that's also where those things, you're like, oh, I'm getting a bit of a lead now. And then you're like, calm down. Hold your horses.
Yeah. Would you describe yourself as a natural runner?
I guess I've always run, but I think I have to work really hard. Like I'm not just like really talented. Like some people can, you know, just go out and run amazing times all the time. I have that, you know, after a race, I have a break. My times go a lot slower and then I have to build up and work hard to get back there. So like, for example, there's a hill that I run up here that I trained for Two Oceans, which is an ultra in Cape Town. And the week before the race last year, I was running up this hill at 5:25 a K. Yesterday, I went and ran up it. And at the moment, I'm running up it at 5:50 a K. And it's the same effort, but I know that I'm just not quite fit enough yet. So I have to grasp, but I like that. So,
yeah, because I think there's something interesting that I've seen with ultra running, which is the quite, I mean, obviously you have to be light, but there's quite a lot of different body shapes in it. I think if you look at something like marathon running, it's very similar. It's very similar composition of bodies. And if you do go into Olympic sports, like it, there is a real genetic element in sort of the track and field events that go on there where that does play quite a role. I remember meeting a swim coach for Team GB and him just talking about how we don't take any swimmers sort of above six, below 6'3" sort of thing. And it's like, well, I cannot teach anyone below 6'3" to move their arms fast enough for someone who's 6'5", 6'7" with a bigger wingspan. It's almost mechanic.
Yeah.
And it's just quite interesting how that almost doesn't seem to play as big a role in ultra running. And I wonder if that's down to the fact that there perhaps does become a point where the psychological and the mindset takes a bigger part of it, because you whilst you are running for a time and you're racing, you're not doing it at this like it's just sub 3 minute kilometers. I wonder if you feel that as well.
Yeah, like I find like body composition and stuff like really interesting because it's physics and it definitely does play a part in it. But I think like I am probably heavier, let's use that term loosely, than most other runners. Like, but I'm actually like quite muscly, but that gives me like more strength in the races and I don't get injured, so I can have longer blocks of training. So for me, I would like rather compromise having like a little bit more weight, being a little bit stronger and not breaking down as much, to being really light and being like literally on that tipping point edge of you could like break down at any point. But yeah, it's definitely, especially in like the races I'm doing, they're very hilly races. And actually, if you're lighter, you're going to get up a hill quicker. But yeah, there's a tipping point, and I do find it. And I've like, that's something that I've kind of experimented with this year a little bit, trying to find that like optimum waist rate. And I find it really weird that people won't talk about it either. It kind of, you know, there's a lot of people that they're too scared, because I think a lot of coaches have done it in a very bad way. Like I had a coach out here a few years ago who came up to me at a finish line and was like, pinched my arm, was like, you're fat, like you do not look good, you're soft, you need to sort it out. I'm like, that is not the way to do it, you nutter. Whereas I think you can have like mature conversations about it and being like, you know, actually maybe if you are a little bit leaner, you're going to race better, and there's ways that you can do this with professionals. But people don't want to talk about it for some. I think they're too scared.
It's probably cancel culture is probably definitely going to play a role in that. I think I've had, we in my sport, cricket, we heard that. We've had, look, I I went through a period where I increased my weight from sort of like low 80s to like 94, 95 kilograms. But the difference being is we're running in, stopping abruptly, and then that's force that's going through our knees and joints and things like that. And it's something that the science on it is it's 8 times your body weight goes through your front foot when you bowl a ball in cricket. So for every kilo that you add on, that's 8 kilos, repeat that 120 times per game. Well, around 120 times is what you're going to be bowling. So you're 800 plus kilograms per kilo of weight that you're putting on. And I put on about 10 to 15 at one stage. And that was a sort of big growth stage. But then I got 2 knee surgeries that I needed to have done. I had tendonitis in both knees that needed to be sorted out. I kept tearing my hamstrings and all sorts. I wasn't mobile enough and I needed to get into flexibility training, and I ended up taking up yoga. But then it was the fact that I realized I wasn't lean enough. I needed to be lean and I needed to get my weight down. And the conversation at no stage was sort of, Lewis, you're too big, you're fat, you're overweight. Yeah. I wasn't fat, but I was carrying far too much weight and load for what I was trying to do. And the conversation was, if you genuinely want to perform better at this, yeah, you're not optimal right now. You're just not optimal in the performance spectrum.
Yeah.
Conversation around aesthetics and how you want to look, that, and having that having that beach body, like that's a different conversation. And but sport, you're not really in it for that. Like you're not, if you're in sport to get an aesthetically good body, then you're completely taking your eyes off the performance element that of what your body is capable of and should be trying to do. Yes, look good, feel good, I get it. But yeah, it's, you definitely got to bridge that gap or have that conversation if someone you believe is not optimally performing with the, I guess, correct every sort of training aspect around what they're doing, whether that's the training they're doing or whatever. But leaning on with yoga, that's something that you are trained in, you do, and also strength and conditioning. You talk about you being muscly.
Yeah.
So when did you get into yoga? And when did you start really taking the strength and conditioning side of running seriously? Because it seems to be in running, that might be the bit that everyone seems to miss out on.
Yeah. Like I just see runners just skipping that all the time and then just getting injured. And you're just like, it's so easy to not get injured. Because for me, I guess I started yoga probably in 2014. So started it back there. Big strength before that. I've kind of always done an element of strength and conditioning. And yoga back then, I was doing like hot yoga classes, like very focused yoga sessions. And then it kind of evolved a little bit. And it was during lockdown where everyone was putting out these free YouTube videos and being like, this is yoga for runners. And I was doing some, and they're like, get your leg and put it around your head. And you're like, mate, I can't touch my thumbs. So I was like, I am taking that as into my own hands. So I actually went and did my yoga course 2 weeks after I finished running from Land's End to John O'Groats, which was very embarrassing because I could not move. Like these other girls in the class were like, are you taking the piss?
You had a good excuse. You had a very good excuse.
Talk about me. That's when I like set up my strength conditioning and yoga for runners, because I wanted to find like an easy way for people to actually do it. And I know like runners' attention span, we will go and run for 5 hours, but our attention span for like mobility and strength is about 30 minutes. So I was like, I'm going to make 30-minute sessions, like short, sharp. You press play, you follow along. I'll talk rubbish to you. We do the session, it's done. And you do it once a week. And everyone always says, you know, does once a week really make a difference? I'm like, well, how much are you doing it at the moment? Like, no. Nah. So yes, start at one, become consistent, and then we can build it up from there. And I think for me, the yoga that I do, it's not like bow to the moon yoga. It's mobility and it's moving your body and it's balance and it's activating all those little muscles in your feet and your core. And it's when we run, we're doing everything in one plane of motion. So actually by doing this strength and mobility and moving in different ways, you can have that bodily awareness to be like, oh, actually, my hip's a bit tight there, or my shin's a bit tight. Let me either go and get a sports massage, or let me go see an osteo and get my back aligned, or actually maybe I just need to hammer some quad stretches for the next few days, or I need to do some more calf raises in my program. And it's giving you that like awareness of fixing things before it actually becomes a problem. And I know runners are like just rubbish at it, but I'm like, I've been doing it now every single week. I have to do it every week because I film it, but I haven't been injured since I started doing it religiously in 2020. So I think it works. Well, it does work. So.
Yeah. Look, I started pretty much around the same time as you. What? Did you say 2014?
That's when I started yoga, yeah.
Yeah, yoga. So yoga's what? When I started sort of S&C around the time when I was about 14, 15, 2004, 5. Yeah. And then, yeah, didn't get into yoga till about 2014. And that was through a plethora of injuries. I don't think I'd gone through a three month span of not picking up some form of niggly injury, like a little muscle tear, like not real muscle off the bone type stuff, but just like grade ones, sometimes a grade two.
Yeah.
And I was getting so frustrated. And our physios had this list for all the players, and it was like a green, amber, red list. And red were like the players that were massively injury prone, and they was dangerous for them to sort of get in and do stuff. And I was like, I want to get off this red list. I've got to do that. So I took up yoga and I didn't get injured for another 18 months. And I went straight onto the green list, and I didn't change my training. I didn't do anything different. I just added that in. And I think you're right. The runners will go out hours on end, do the monotonous running. They're there. They're doing something which you could actually argue is quite boring and dull.
Yeah.
And then the argument is, that the thing that they need to make that better for them is boring and dull. And it's like, how does that not fit in with your agenda? But I think it's more a perspective thing, right? It's sometimes not even, they know that it's good for them, that you know it's good for them. When I started getting into a bit more longer distance running after I retired, I could tell the multi-directional aspect of doing something like yoga. It meant that on trail runs that I could go and do, when I was met with a sort of uneven surface, I wasn't fixated or rigid in my body's ability to only work in one way. And I was far more multidimensional. And I felt like I could sort of run and literally move off track slightly if I needed to sort of dart out of the way or something gave way. And I didn't feel like I was vulnerable at all. But to get people to understand that, I think requires a bit of a perspective shift, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess what is your thoughts on trying to get people into that frame of mind, like to do the thing that you know is good for you? Have you found anything that's helped people that you teach and work with?
I think for me, it's just about like making it as easy and accessible for people as you can. So like that's why I've set up my one, like, you can do it at the gym if you want. You can do it at the park. You can do it at home. You can fit it in however you want. And I think like a lot of people, you hear all these rules and people get scared about you have to do strength on this day and you have to do mobility. I'm like, it doesn't matter. Like, play around. Like, sometimes I do strength before a run, sometimes after, sometimes on a rest day. Like, there's no rules. So, you know, for me, it's just about keeping it short and sharp and to the point, and there's no messing around, and you're getting like in and out, you're doing the session and you're getting it done. And I think it's also about finding a teacher or a program that you like. Like, some people, you know, might find one person's chat like really boring. They might need someone to help them hype them up a little bit more. Some people might enjoy that, you know, the yoga where they talk to you about a story of the moon, and it's just about finding like what you connect with and what you find motivating, and that can also change over time. So it's fine if you get bored after it, you know, you've done a year of one program, you're like, cool, I want to change it, you can move to another teacher. Like, it doesn't matter. You've just got to find what works for you, and you've just got to be consistent, because Like, I have people when they join my program, they're like, can I do more sessions in a week? I'm like, just chill. Like, just do your two. And then once you've done 2 months of getting them in every week, then we can chat about adding like a bonus video or an extra session in. Because you see with all these things, you start something new like yoga, you join a new class, you get your 10 free sessions, you go and smash them all in one go, and then you're like, yeah, okay, I'm bored now. But that's something to look forward to, then be bored with it.
That's a really good point. But and also the physical side of it. If you throw yourself into doing nothing and then you're doing everything, it's like quite literally trying to rock up and squat 100 kilos. You've never done it before. You're going to feel this the next day. It's going to suck. And I think that there's also an element of it where people feel, if I'm going to get into something like yoga, I need to be better than what I currently am at. And I'm always trying to remind people, and this is not even just in yoga, but especially this, is that the very first session that you do, or the very first time you push yourself into a new boundary of something, it's going to be ugly. It's going to be nowhere near perfect. It's going to be nowhere near expert level. It's going to suck. You're going to tell yourself a lot of stuff about yourself. But in the end of it, it's just, can you just do a little bit more than what you've done now? Yes. Yeah. Go again the next day or the 2 days later, whenever it might be. And I found a way that actually really worked for me was almost turning it into like a gym program around body parts. So I would be really I have it pretty much specific of when I'm going to do hamstrings. I'm going to focus on maybe like the back line, the back part of the body, or I might go quads and hip flexors, or I might have a day that's shoulders and hips and do a bit more, or a rotation all day and something like that. And it was almost like the same way you might set up a weight session where you're like pull, push, shoulders, biceps, whatever it might be. But it just broke it up because, sort of similar to what you were saying, when I got into it, I didn't really want to have the stories of the moon told to me. I was pretty functional in what I wanted to learn about it. It was probably more the meditation side came much later, but I just wanted to make sure that my body was feeling good. And so I treated it like a gym session. And with that, it meant that the length of it didn't, I sort of broke out the rules that it needed to be. It needed to be 30 to 45 minutes or an hour and something like that, where actually it was like, well, if I'm breaking it up over the week, I could do 15 minutes here, 15 minutes there, 15 minutes, especially if I was doing like two a day trainings and things like that. It was a much easier approach to bringing it into your training, which sometimes is where people struggle.
Yeah. And I even say that with like my videos, like generally the strength will do 3 rounds. And I'm like, if you can't do it all in one go, like do one on Monday, one round on Wednesday, one on Friday, split the yoga in half, or like just do it as much as you can and then stop, like it's fine. As long as, you know, doing something is better than not doing anything and being like overwhelmed and not knowing where to start. Just start.
Yeah. So what's on your agenda right now? What are you working towards currently? You said you got a 10K that you're going to blitz yourself in, but is there anything, what's that for, that 10K, or is there something past that that you're working towards?
Yeah, so it's quite nice. So my like main goals next year are to do Two Oceans Ultra in April, which is 56K, like Philly Ultra, and then Comrades in June, which is 90K, again, Hilly Road Ultra. And so to do both of those races, you have to do a qualifying race to get the time. So either marathon or longer, but my 50K time counts as my qualifying. So it's quite nice. Normally I would be training for a marathon at this time of year, but it's done. So we're actually for the next like 3 months, just going to work on a bit of speed. So basically 10Ks. Some fast stuff. I'm on a hill block at the moment for the next month, which involves doing treadmill hill reps, which are disgusting.
Designed to get you faster. So the treadmill hill reps are designed to just increase your speed.
Just build strength. So it's like a strength, using hills as strength, which will then translate to speed on the road.
So will you then change like your weights and your weight training or anything around that with it?
Yeah, so I think I'm going to go into like a really heavy weight slog. I've got like a post-marathon, post-race weights thing, which I'm doing now, which is just lighter kettlebell balancey stuff, probably for one more week. And then I think I'm going to build a program where I'm squatting, deadlifting, but heavy weights to go with the hills. And yeah, it's quite cool to like be doing a little bit of different training, because like last year I basically did a marathon block and then two ultra blocks and then back into a marathon block for the 50k, and like my head needs a break as well. So
yeah, it must be a much nicer of doing the shorter sessions, just shorter yep. running in general.
Like my longest run for like the next couple of months is probably going to be 90 minutes on us.
Yeah. I tell you what's quite nice talking to you and listening to you speak about running is I don't get the sense that running consumes you like I see it consume other runners.
Yeah.
And I know people, being a runner is such an identity driven thing. Like you hear, I'm a runner. And I think that's it's obviously a beautiful part of your identity to have, because it's so good for you and it's so natural. It's a very natural thing that we do. But I don't get this sense that you're beholden to that part of you. I could be wrong, but what's your feel?
No, I think you're right. I think I don't know. It's still, for me, it's like a hobby. It still feels like it's a hobby. It's something that I do for fun. I've got like a really nice group of friends that I go and run with, even though we do really hard sessions and we train hard and I have a very structured program. It doesn't feel like it's a job or a slog or I have to. Obviously, we all have those runs, but I probably had like two of them this year where I'm like, oh my God, I've got to drag myself out to run, which I think is really lucky. But I think as well, the lifestyle that I've got here is like, Cape Town's amazing and there's great places to go and walk and eat and drink coffee and go to markets, and that's what I really enjoy doing. So I've got like a really nice balanced life here where basically all I do is I'm either going to a restaurant eating or I'm running. But it's a nice balance.
Yeah, and I'd heard you had a cake business before.
I did.
So you enjoy your cakes a little bit as well then.
We had good cake today. We went to this place, it's called Pajamas and Jam. It's like a 45-minute drive from Cape Town and it is insane. We had like breakfast, brunch, and then these cakes. Like, I can't even explain how amazing this cake shop is. And then I had this passion fruit cake with meringue on top of it and it was sensational.
Wow.
So good.
And even there, just as you're talking about running and your experiences there, like the Lion King thing, for example, that's a very playful way of making something that is very monotonous, a bit more enjoyable and probably a little bit more motivating. You did that Lion King playful adventure that you were having in the race. Do you bring that into your training? Do you bring that into sort of what you do? And so is it a playful experience when you're running?
Yeah, I haven't yet. That was the first time I'd done that in the race, so I might. But I think like in training, I guess I mainly train with a group. So like I started a little group in Cape Town that I train with. And when you're kind of grafting and doing the sessions together, we're all kind of motivating each other through the session without really knowing it. It's either like, I need to try and keep up with the guys in front, or I don't want matey boy to catch me from the back. So I think you don't really need to distract your mind because there's a structure to the workout that you're doing and you've got everyone else to rely on. Where like in a race, yes, you've got the same goal of finishing the race, but actually your strategy could be very different, where like, I guess the strategy or the goal of the session that we're doing, we've all got the same goal for that session. So yeah, I feel like you don't really need to dig deep or kind of go to the part in training, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. So I can almost even relate it to even team sports, which is kind of strange. Like when you're in training, you're very structured and knowing what you're doing. Game day, race day, even when you're in a team sport, you are kind of on your own a little bit. You're still making those decisions on your own. And I still really did. I liked what you said about running on feel. a previous episode we'd had on the podcast with Tim Harkness, who was Chelsea psychologist. He spoke about Thierry Henry, famous football player, allowing the game to help him make the decisions, not feeling like he had to have this decision and be live or die with, by it, but it was actually more around listening to the game and letting the game tell him, sort of thing. And that's sort of similar lines to having that feel when you're on your own, when you're on your own racing and having that feel for yourself. But in training, you can bounce ideas off people. You can pick them up. You maybe get your energy from picking someone up, inspiring them through sessions. So yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, and it's like, that's why I just think if you can, I know a lot of people are like, no, I like to do my runs on my own, like I'm a lone wolf, that's my time. But like, you will run so much better if you can run in a group. You don't have to do all your runs in a group, but those quality sessions, if you can do them with other people, you're going to run better. Like, full stop. Just because, like, you will just have that, like, competitive nature of the session thrown in. And I get, yeah, like, sometimes I don't want to talk to someone, I just want to go for a run by myself, but yeah, if you want to run better, like run with other people, I think that's the best.
Yeah. Look, just a couple of things before we wrap up the episode. I always ask people on the show what they are perhaps listening to or have read or maybe watching that is currently inspiring them for the listeners.
I've actually just finished watching the David Beckham documentary, literally on bike. That was quite cool. Yeah, I didn't quite know where that was going to go, but seeing someone that's like so obsessed with football, he's literally willing to like throw his family under the bus. You're like, that is wild. Like, I don't know. Have you seen it?
Yes, I have. And I've just finished the Ronnie O'Sullivan one.
Okay.
And that is, and David Beckham was at the premiere for that.
Mm.
I think they're friends, and you can almost see the almost a reason why they're friends. Not only just because they're probably they're British superstars in sport, but the way they were obsessed with what they were doing, it's eye opening.
Yeah, so I like that, and then I also really like the Point Break one, the tennis doco, but mainly actually watching Onsuba. Like, I really like her like grit and like determination and like tenacity to like keep on coming back, like keep finishing second and just like grinding. Like, I really liked her competitiveness and sportsmanship in the game.
Yeah, I love that series. I really enjoyed it. I almost said it was it was like a mindset / psychology documentary. They just happened to be playing tennis.
Yeah,
it's
great.
It's really interesting with all the different strengths and challenges that all these different athletes have, and like Swiatek, like she's amazing, she's dominating, but some of her challenges are keeping that and expectations, and then there's some other players that are just trying to get that first win, trying to get them the name on the board, sort of thing. It's a very good document. It's a good one, the Beckham one, but there's some good ones there as well. And to finish off, what is something that you would challenge listeners to do that they can go and do from this conversation that we've had? If you could pose a challenge to them, perhaps to take action and go and do something, what would that be?
I think jotting down your race plan. So before any race, competition, event, anything that you think is going to be tough or challenging, just sit down, take that time away, take yourself away, draw it out, think it through. Sometimes it's hard to like actually sit there and like write the goals and stuff down, but I think it's really important. And yeah, it's cool when you can see it on paper and use colorful pens and all that sort of jazz. It's a nice thing to do.
Yeah, head over to your Instagram to go and see some of those colorful plans that you've put up. They're really interesting. And with that, where's the best place for us to send everyone if they want to reach out, follow you, follow your stuff? Where's the best place?
Yeah, probably Instagram. Just Carla Molinaro on Instagram. All my training's on Strava. If you want to see what training I do, it's all open and it's on there. And then probably 2 months ago, I started a little thing on Threads where I write three things a day that are like good, bad, happy, sad about my day that I reflect on that I've been doing for a couple of months.
Awesome. I'm going to link all of those in the show notes. And that's the first that's the first person to put up their Strava. That's for sure. That, more people should do that. More people should get on the Strava.
You can have a look. It's all there.
Look, Carla, this has been amazing. I really appreciate your time and having this insight into how the race went, but also your experiences so far. So thank you.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me on.